Chapter 8. The Rich, the Robbers, and the Reward. Wednesday, the 17th of April, 1191. Tom and Walter had been partners for years. Both born and raised in Nottingham, they had joined the City Watch together nearly 20 years ago. They were now 38 and 40, respectively. Too long in the tooth for a crusade when King Richard had come a-calling. But the sudden scarcity of able-bodied men had meant their duties had expanded these past few years. Now they had to patrol the roads leading into the city. This wasn't so bad. They got a horse each, a slight pay increase, and the air was certainly a lot fresher than in town. But the recent zeal of the outlaws that lived in the forest was beginning to cause them both concern. "So, what happened?" Tom asked the pudgy nobleman. The watchman had seen the carriage first, an ostentatious-looking thing, but no horses in sight. Then they'd seen Sir Humphrey Stockport. Sir Humphrey was the sort of man who only sweated when it was hot, never from physical exertion. The kind of highborn who used his fortune to be as comfortable as humanly possible at all times. He was now decidedly uncomfortable. Sitting dejectedly on the ground by the side of his carriage, he had waved them down with a flourish of a silk handkerchief. "I think even I would have robbed him," Walter had whispered to Tom as they rode up. They struggled to suppress their grins as the nobleman began to recount his ordeal.
"They came out of the forest," said Sir Humphrey. "I thought it was just one man at first. My carriage had stopped suddenly, and I leant my head out to see what was going on, and there, in the middle of the road, was a man with his hand raised, telling us to halt, and..."
"What did it look like?" interrupted Tom. Sir Humphrey seemed the sort who wouldn't draw breath.
"I couldn't see his face. He was wearing a hood, a red hood," the nobleman sputtered.
"Right." Walter scratched the bridge of his nose. "Well, a red hood. That is pretty distinctive. Can't be too many of them knocking about."
"You said they came out at Forest. Did you get a look at others?" asked Tom.
"It all happened so quickly. They came from the trees, and the next thing I knew, the carriage door was being flung open. The ruffian in the red hood peers in, sees me, seems annoyed, and then walks away, leaving another hooded figure, huge..."
"Red again," Walter interjected.
"No, green, dark green. Green as the choking ivy on oak," Sir Humphrey said dramatically.
"You said he were huge," pressed Walter.
"Must have been 8 feet high. He bade me leave the carriage and explained that I was being robbed. It was at that point that my blood began to boil. I always keep a dagger about my person."
"Probably for cutting cheese," thought Tom.
"And if you don't mind me asking, sir, what is a man of your standing doing travelling through woods alone without an entourage?" Tom asked.
"Are you trying to blame the victim?"
"Oh, no, sir," replied Tom quickly. "Please continue."
"Very well. As I was travelling alone, aside from my cowardly coachman, I realised that I would have to defend my own person. I exited my carriage, dagger in hand. I lunged at the big man, but something struck the blade from my grasp. It was the red-hooded knave. He had shot it out of my hand with an arrow. I didn't know such a thing was possible. Well, they took my purse and jewels, paid my coachman for the inconvenience, and made off with my horses. Oh, what a hideous trial."
Sir Humphrey slumped back down against his carriage. Reliving his ordeal seemed to have taken a lot out of him.
"I could hear them laughing as they made their way back into the woods. Barbarians!" he finished with a whimper.
Tom and Walter looked at each other. Outlaws had been hiding in the forest for months now, but they had never done something quite so brazen.
They had heard reports of the giant before, but this figure in the red hood was new. Tom and Walter had their hands full the next few days. It seemed that every carriage carrying a wealthy passenger was targeted. They all relayed the same story. A red-hooded man and a giant in green, alongside a band of equally colourful characters. No commoner was attacked, though. Every produce cart, farmer and trader made it into the city without a scratch. They thought they were onto something when they received a tip that some of the men of the forest were drinking in a local village inn. But when they arrived, the keeper said that they just missed them. Apparently, the whole gang had turned up, singing and making merry with the locals. They had paid for their drinks with a jewelled ring and brought several rounds for all in attendance. Tom and Walter asked every patron which way the outlaws went. They received half a dozen different answers. "Is that all?" The sheriff had listened to every word of Tom and Walter's report without interrupting, his long index fingers pressed up to his pale, thin lips. He was sat at his wooden counting table, which was heavy with papers and coins. Tom and Walter had only been called into this room twice before, both tense and unnerving affairs. The stone walls of his castle chamber felt oppressive, and the sheriff kept the room cold. The only heat and light came from the two candles on the table. The watchman knew the sheriff could have taken any room in the castle, but he had chosen this dark cellar. It was said that he never wanted anyone to watch him count.
Yes, sheriff, all the noblemen had the same story. This lot it hard and fast, Tom replied.
His eyes flicked to the door. He wanted to get out of this room and away from his boss's gaze as quickly as possible.
Well, then,
the sheriff lifted himself out of his low chair, placing his many ringed hands on the table. This matter needs to be dealt with in the same manner. The royal procession will arrive in 30 days. Every crown, fogger and lord luster within 50 miles will be making their way to Nottingham.
The sheriff straightened his leather tunic. It was said that he had once been a tracker, and he still dressed as if he were about to start a hunt. The rings were the only finery he allowed himself. Tom and Walter knew that every one of them came from a finger he had personally removed.
And if this noble brood come from the north, they will be coming through Sherwood.
He lowered his head and paused.
The silence unsettled Tom and Walter. Was he expecting them to suggest something? Suddenly, the sheriff clapped, making them both jump.
Right then, here's what we're going to do. You,
the sheriff pointed a long finger at Walter. We need the local riffraff to turn him in. No one's going to squeal on a man who's robbing the rich. You know that wheat field to the southwest of the city? The Rogers one?
Yes, sir, Walter replied nervously. The dog-like hunger in the sheriff's dark eyes disturbed him.
Burn it down, discreetly. The sheriff stroked his pointed beard, ignoring the looks of alarm from his men. And you?
The sheriff turned his attention to Tom. Rally up some scribes. I want bills up all over the area for his arrest. Put a reward on them and list his crimes, including the field thing. Use simple drawings for the illiterates. Dismissed.
The sheriff pushed back his oiled black hair and returned to his chair as Tom and Walter began to leave.
Oh, Thomas!
Tom turned, his hand clutching the door handle hopefully.
Sir, give him a name. Something catchy.
The two old partners left the chamber, leaving the long-fingered man counting his coins. A small, contented smile stretched across his snake lips. Tom could still smell the smoke coming from the burnt wheat field as he nailed up the first of the reward bills to a tree.
Though he wasn't wholly comfortable with the sheriff's plan, he was sure it would work. The days were numbered for the newly christened Robin Hood and his band of merry men. A week later, and the tensions in and around Nottingham had heightened considerably. Half of the locals seemed staunchly under the impression that the already infamous Robin Hood was a dangerous thief and saboteur. The other half knew him as the champion of the common man. Though most of the men of the forest were new to politics, Adam was impressed with how quickly they picked up its tricks. As soon as they had heard that the burning of the field was being blamed on them, John had immediately gone to the farmer, professed their innocence, and offered him money for his destroyed crops. The overjoyed farmer now left fresh bread for them in the forest every morning. When they had begun to see the wanted posters, Will had distributed charcoal to every literate member of the band. Within a few days, "Robs the rich to feed the poor" had been added to the list of charges on the posters. David, a very creative youth who had fled his family home under curious circumstances, had the marvellous idea of dyeing all their hoods red. That way, any one of them could be Robin. Today had been relatively successful. Most of the men had already left the roads to distribute the day's taking among themselves and the surrounding commoners. Will and Adam were the only two left on patrol. The sun was turning in for the day, and they too reclined lazily on the bough of a large tree. Will couldn't believe his good fortune. He'd never been so well fed and rested in all his life. But he worried about his new friend. Will was only alive today because he saw things that other men missed. And although Adam always seemed outwardly cheerful, drinking and eating and singing as much as the other men, he could see that Adam was getting frustrated. Will was just summoning up the courage to ask him about it when he heard the familiar noise of clopping hooves and churning wheels. Adam pulled up his hood, fixed his bow, and turned to his young comrade. "Are you ready?"
"One more and then we'll call it a day," Will asked, hopefully.
How can the young have so much energy and be so slothful at the same time? Will reluctantly roused himself and perched next to Adam, who had a clearer vantage point. The coach was not a commoner's. Its varnished wooden panels gleamed in the setting sun. Their roles were well practiced by now. Adam would jump in front and stop the coach, while Will would appear from the side, ready to meet any resistance. But as their target grew closer, they began to hear voices from inside the carriage.
"Oh, don't be like that, my maid of eternal beauty,"
a man's voice slurred.
"No, stop it. For the last time, unhand me," a woman replied, distressed.
Will excitedly turned to Adam. "Sounds like a woman. Is that her?"
"I'm not sure. It's been so long," Adam admitted. Would he even recognise her voice if he heard it?
Will thought he detected a slight tremor in his friend's speech. He shook Adam by the shoulder in what he hoped was a reassuring manner.
"Oh, come on. This could be it."
With a flourish, Will swung through the tree branches to assume his position. Yeah, it could be. Here she was, a woman in a carriage, being taken to Nottingham, seemingly against her will. There were more shouts from the carriage.
"I swear, if you touch me again, I will find you sleeping and gouge out your eyes."
That could be her. Hope was beginning to build within his chest, despite himself. It was so dangerous to hope.
"I like a woman with a bit of spunk," laughed her attacker.
Her attacker.
What was he still doing in this bloody tree? "No, stop it," the woman in the carriage cried out again.
With one swift movement, Adam leapt directly from the tree onto the roof of the moving carriage, landing just behind a rather bewildered coachman. "Lovely night for a walk, isn't it? I can take over from here for a while," Adam said jovially. The coachman went for the knife in his belt. "Don't," Adam requested. But it was no use. The coachman drew the blade and swung at Adam. With a quick dodge and a practiced blow to the back of the head, the coachman was unconscious and deposited in a nearby gooseberry bush. Taking his stead, Adam pulled back on the reins and brought the carriage to a sudden halt before swinging around to the side of the coach and forcefully ripping the door open. "Eve!" It wasn't her. "Ning." Adam recovered as best he could, sounding oddly formal. He found himself facing a large knight with a salt-and-pepper beard, wine-stained tunic and a sword at his hip. A few glass bottles, presumably the source of the knight's wine stain, bestrew the floor. The knight had been poring at the dress of a noble maid, who still had both arms up in front of her, clearly trying to fend him off. Their eyes met. Adam was looking into brown, almond-shaped eyes, framed within a heart-shaped face and a braid of auburn hair. Her eyes widened as she saw him, half relieved, half afraid. But it wasn't her. "Forgive the intrusion, my lady. Is this man bothering you?" asked Adam, attempting a smile as disappointment settled in his stomach.
"Filthy peasant!"
The knight lunged clumsily at Adam. Adam moved quickly to the side, causing the drunk to fall through the open door and land face first in a deep puddle of mud.
"Filthy nobleman," Adam replied.
He couldn't let his disappointment show. He was Robin now, and he had to stay in character. Robin Hood was never disappointed, only merry.
"I am Sir Guy of Gisborne. You have dishonoured my lady, whom I was chaperoning to Nottingham. Prepare to die."
The knight had somehow made it to his feet, although he seemed unlikely to stay there. He fumbled for his sword. Adam took in his attacker. Sir Guy was a larger-than-average man, obviously trained in combat. Even in his cups, once pulled from its scabbard, the knight held his sword with form. He and Adam circled each other.
"Oh, chaperoning. Is that what that was?
Forgive me, Sir Guy. I am Robin Hood. I know not of the ways of chivalry. My friend and I are simply here to rob you." Adam gave a small bow, careful not to take his eyes off the sword.
"Friend?"
A confused expression crossed Sir Guy's face. The answer came in the form of an arrow whistling past, barely an inch from his nose. The inebriated knight spun to see three fingers waving at him.
"Good evening, sir," said Will merrily.
Sir Guy reddened, furious. He held the sword in a defensive stance, positioning himself between Adam and the carriage.
"I am Sir Guy of Gisborne. You have dishonoured my lady, whom I was chaperoning to Nottingham. Prepare to..."
But they would never know if it was death they were again to prepare for, or if the knight had decided to deviate from his pronouncement. A large wine bottle appeared above Sir Guy's head before descending with a satisfying clunk. The knight fell in a heap at the steps of the carriage. The maid brandished the bottle triumphantly. Will dropped down from the tree to join an open-mouthed Adam.
"Thank you for the distraction," the woman said calmly, though a victorious fire burned in her eyes. "I've been wanting to do that since Leicester. I am Lady Marian, and it appears I am in need of a new chaperone."
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 8, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed it, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review, so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details are available on our Twitter account at evergreenbook1. That's at evergreenbook1. The next chapter comes out on September 20th. Thanks for listening.